Blog Talk Radio.
And hello, lots of dead air there, and I am so very sorry about that. Technical difficulties beyond our control, as they would say in the old days. Hey, James Bostic here with you. This is the American Brand Radio Initiative, and rumors of our not being on tonight have been greatly exaggerated. I do once again apologize for that. Technology, making our lives easier, right? Well, it's awfully good to be here with you. Happy New Year. I hope that it was a safe and sane New Year's Eve and celebration, and a happy and healthy and prosperous New Year in the coming 2018. We live in interesting times. As I say that a lot, it comes from an old Chinese curse, actually, that if somebody ever told you, may you live in interesting times, they were saying, you know, you and the horse you rode in on, pal. So we here, all across America and all the ships at sea, we live in interesting times as well. I got some stuff I wanted to share with you. There's some really exciting things going on in Iran right now. They have been going on for the last 3 to 5 days. We've got to do a little time traveling in order to set the stage on this. And we're going to go back originally to 1979, just for a little while. In 1979, November 4th, November 8th, somewhere along in there, early November, students, I'm doing my air fingers quote thing there, Iranian university students took over and held the United States Embassy hostage. Now, in the months that had preceded what had happened in November when the hostages were taken in Iran, that almost 40 years ago. Before that time, and I don't want to be condescending or anything like that, but you see, the average median age of people in the United States right now is about 38 years old. They weren't born, they don't know anything about it, and I got a feeling it wasn't taught to them in school based on my experiences with that. But Iran was a vibrant, westernized, modern country. And there's some significant things that have happened in the last couple of days that will throw back to that. In those days, through the 50s and the 70s until he was deposed, the Shah of Iran was a man named Mohammad Reza Pahlavi. And his father, Reza Shah Pahlavi, was the original Shah in Shah of Iran. And what they had was a constitutional monarchy. In other words, they had a king, and they also had kind of like Britain, really. And then they had a parliament, or they had a senate, and they had this congressional and legislative body that worked in conjunction with the monarchy. He was a stalwart ally during the Cold War because his country, if you look at the map, the country of Iran, kind of blunts the southern, the southeast, southwestern part, I guess, southwestern part of Russia, northeastern part of Iran is what I'm trying to get at. They were a border state there, and so it was kind of like a buffer state, and they were anti-communist. And that was a good thing because the Cold War at times in that area, in Iraq and Iran, and throughout the Middle East as well, through proxy wars and usurpations and terrorist acts, the Cold War got pretty hot at times. So in 1979, late 1978, early 1979, the Shah is deposed through conspiracies that took place in the Cyrus Vance State House during the Carter administration. And through media and I guess, the lack of a better term, propaganda, the Shah was made to be seen as a tyrant. And these student terrorists were interpreted to be freedom fighters, revolutionaries. And they were revolutionaries, that's true. But it was a retrogressive revolution. It was a devolution, really, because what they did is they went back 700 years because there was this guy in Paris, the Ayatollah Khomeini, the first Ayatollah Khomeini, who had been banished from Iran because of his radical beliefs and his 700 years in the past ideology. he was banished from Iran. The Shah banished him. He could have killed him, and he probably should have. But had he done so, we would have made this guy even more of a martyr. Well, they return the Ayatollah to Iran, and the hostages were held for 444 days until about 2 minutes after Ronald Reagan took his hand off the Bible after solemnly swearing to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States, so help him God. And the hostages came home. But on the downside, and that's a great thing, that was a victory, a great moral victory for the United States after 4 years of a completely ineffective and flaccid Carter administration. And that's the one thing I've got to say. Jimmy Carter is probably dancing around, high-fiving, low-fiving people, blowing the horn on his car, waving there, because he is no longer the worst president in the United States. And so if anybody owes Barack Obama, you know, hey, dude, you did me a solid and I'm grateful, it's Jimmy Carter. So Iran, since 1979, reverted to Sharia law. So you have the mullahs, and you have the imams and the ayatollahs and Donner and Blitzen, and so they have this theocratic rule set up. And again, we're talking about something that goes back, precedes the Middle Ages. This is barbaric, primitive stuff that they're doing over there. It's tyranny. And so in 2009, after all this time, you know, after 30 years of this, we saw the Green Revolution. And this brings in Rouhani, President Rouhani, the guy that came in after Ahmadinejad. And he's supposed to be a moderate, but he's not really a moderate. He's a shill for the mullahs. He's a shill for the imams. And the people have had enough. They've had enough of having living under this oppressive rule. They've had enough of these quasi-Iranian banks draining the wealth of the country and investing it in a nuclear program and being, you know, a state sponsor of terrorism and sending money to Hamas, sending money, you know, building up this militaristic force of Muslim warriors throughout the Middle East in an attempt to establish a new caliphate, and they've had it. This is not the kind of people that the Iranian people are. People think about Iran today, and I really want to stress this, because what we're seeing, I think, is the beginnings of a revolution. The imams and the mullahs are worried. They're very worried. They're worried to the point that they're firing back on the crowds. They're worried to the point that they have shut down any kind of inlet or outlet for social media. So that means no Facebook, no YouTube. They just shut the internet down. But things are still coming out. And we're seeing videos this weekend in 8 of the major cities in Iran. Iran's a pretty decent-sized country. There were protests. And the protests turned violent when the Republican guards opened fire, and the police and security forces opened fire on these people. But unlike the 2009 revolutions, where there was blood in the streets, again with the mullahs bringing the heel of their boot down on these oppressed people, is a different guy in D.C. And this guy in D.C., believes in the Iranian people. And he believes in the Iranian people's right to choose their own form of government. Now, here's the significant thing, and I'm trying to bring up some articles now that I had bookmarked before my browser got diarrhea and started leaking all over the place, and I had to put it back up, and I apologize for that. I don't normally use that kind of language. Forgive me. But seriously, though, in talking about this, we may be seeing the beginnings of a revolution. Now, let me tell you what's going to happen if this succeeds. And I believe that this time it will succeed, because in 2009, Susan Rice and Barack Obama and Valerie Jarrett and that whole host of traitors and seditious individuals did nothing. They said nothing that would have given any encouragement to the Iranian people to say, hey, you know what? We're with you. No, it's an Iranian affair. It's an internal matter. And, you know, we're not going to get involved in how they run it. You know, we're going to be watching. We'll be watching with, we'll be looking on with a mixture of hope and fear. But we're not going to do anything. That's about how far it's going to go. And the mullahs and the imams and the security forces and their commanders understood this very clearly. And so they acted. And they acted without mercy. And the blood ran in the streets of Tehran and all the other cities. And blood is running in the streets of Tehran now. However, the blood that's running in the streets now is about equal on both sides. People have risen up, and they're going to continue to rise up. And I'm not going to say that it's definitely going to happen, because these people have put down, these regimes have put down popular revolutions in the past, and they do so mercilessly. But if the people rise up, and people in the crowds have been referencing the Shah. Well, he died in 1980, pancreatic cancer. He was, I think, finally given haven in Egypt. I think that's where he was. That's where he finally died. He had pancreatic cancer or liver cancer. I can't remember which. And the United States sold him out. He was allowed entry into the United States, but then when Tehran complained about it, and the Iranian Revolutionary Council complained about it, Jimmy Carter and the State Department, run by Cyrus Vance, all these left-wing kook nutbags, God, they turned the man away. They sold him out. They betrayed him. And he'd been a staunch ally of the United States in the war on communism. But if this happens, possibly what we would see is a return to that modern, westernized Iranian culture and civilization that we saw before the revolution of 1979. And that could be a big deal. That could be a big deal because Iran is one of the top sponsors, one of the top state sponsors of terrorism. They bleed their people, just like the North Korean government bleeds their people of all the resources, and they dump it into these militaristic wings of the Communist Party. Tehran's doing the same thing, except it's not communism. It's fundamentalist Islamism. They want to call it radical. They want to call it... These people that do these things, these barbarous acts that we see on YouTube and on the news and the stuff we read about that these guys are doing to Christians and Jews, they do this because their Quran commands them to. There is no moderate Muslim. That's a myth. That's hype. It's a lie. Purveyed by those in the media and left-wing elitist types in the government. There is no moderate Muslim. The moderate Muslim will be the one who holds your feet, while the radical Muslim cuts off your head. You guys don't hear me get this animated about stuff like this very often. Well, and I'm not really sure why I do. I guess because I was a teenager. I was a senior in high school. And the possibility of military conflict with Iran was very real at that time. Well, we thought it was real. We didn't realize that Jimmy Carter was a big old, you know, puss. And you know, it wasn't going to happen. He was going to bow out. He wouldn't do it. He might call on the United Nations for help, and they'll, you know, do what they did. That's another great thing. The United Nations is $285 billion short in their budget because Donald Trump said, No, I don't think so. We're cutting that off. Winning. You're going to get so sick of winning. And by God, I don't think I'm going to, but we'll see. So anyway, if this happens, all this money that Iran has been doling out to Hamas, to the Muslim Brotherhood, to the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, all these various and sundry militaristic Islamic factions. That's going to stop. That's going to stop. And when that stops, these guys are going to die off. They're going to wither. And don't think that it's all idealism with these guys. The guys that cut off the heads, the guys that burn the cities, that immolate people, the guys that rape women and children and do those things. Yeah, they're believing in what they do. But the heads who order them to put on the suicide vest and detonate it, those guys are crooks. They're Muslim thugs. They're crooks. No different than the North Korean thugs and crooks that run the communist system there. No different than the theocratic imams and mullahs that are thugs and crooks that are running Iran. No different than thugs and crooks anyway. Okay, they just have a different motivation. In North Korea, it's communism. Excuse me. In Iran, it's fundamentalist Islam. It's not radical. It's fundamental. These are the fundamental things. And if you look through the Quran, you see these things. And that's what these guys are doing. In their eyes, Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea, in their eyes, we're not even human. Why? Because we don't believe as they do, because we don't submit to Allah. And the truth is, it's the other way around. They're the barbarians. They're the subhumans. And, you know, these things that are happening, this little cascade, this little chain of events that we've seen over the last 3 or 4 days, well, that I've seen, I don't know if any of you guys see it, by now, MSNBC, CNN, and those guys are probably, they're probably reluctantly and begrudgingly talking about it. Because guys like me have been talking about it for days. I already did my weekend show, Conservative's Perspective, on this very same thing. And I'm sharing it with you tonight because they've increased. The protests have increased. The demonstrations have increased. Sadly, the violence has increased. But what we're seeing, too, in a larger measure, there's a lot of things, there's a lot of different ways to look at this. You know, you have the economic aspect of it that, if this regime falls, if the mullahs fall, and from my lips to God's ears, let us pray that happens, and that the Iranian people, one of the most educated peoples in that area, an educated and cultured and civilized people, not the Iranian government, the Iranian people, let me be clear, they can restore what they had before the time of the revolution. And it wouldn't take too long, a decade, you know, it might take about fundamentally the same amount of time, you know, it took to get them where they were. But strides would be great and improvements would be noticeable and they would be immediate. Again, all this money dries up because the mullahs, if it comes down to it and the heat is on and these cats have to get out of town, they're loading up the planes. They're loading up the convoys, they're loading up the gold, they're loading up the loot, and they're going to bug out just like the Nazis did, just like the corrupt communists did in Romania, in Poland, in Hungary, in Czechoslovakia. They're going to do the same thing because they're no different. They wrap themselves up in the Quran. They exploit the barbarity of that primitive philosophy. They're no better than the Nazis. They're no better than the Japanese during the Second World War. They're no better than the Russians or the Viet Cong. They're no better than any other enemy we've ever faced throughout the history of the Republic. It's just that simple. They are the same. The problem has been with the lack of steel in the spine of the leadership of the United States. That has changed. On the same day, December 29th, that Iranians took to the streets in the largest anti-regime demonstrations since the 2009 Green Revolution. Donald Trump put out this statement on Twitter. He said, many reports of peaceful protests by Iranian citizens fed up with the regime's corruption and its squandering of the nation's wealth to fund terrorism abroad. The Iranian government should respect their people's rights to express themselves. The world is watching. The next day, Saturday, the 30th, Donald Trump tweets, and that's the genius of the man. The entire world understands that the good people of Iran want change. And other than the vast military power of the United States, that Iran's people are what their leaders fear the most. Now, these guys are not going to give up power easily. But when the time comes to either give up power or face the sword, they're going to give up power. They're going to roll out. They're going to make a deal. December 30th, Donald Trump tweets, oppressive regimes cannot endure forever, and the day will come when the Iranian people will face a choice again. The world is watching. Now, these were very quick in terms of foreign policy and in terms of, I don't want to say theater, but to a certain extent, yeah, there's theatrical and dramatic moments to it. These contrast starkly with President Obama's silence and then soft peddling when pro-democracy protesters were risking their lives and being violently subdued by the regime security forces for protesting the Shiite fundamentalist Iranian government. By not backing, strongly backing, the anti-extremist demonstrators, Barack Obama failed spectacularly to take advantage of a rare opportunity to support a grassroots opposition to one of the most destabilizing regimes in the world. Now, in 2009, those protests were launched in the summer. They were launched on June 14th, one day after President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad purportedly won re-election in a landslide victory amid a maelstrom of widespread allegations of voting irregularities and fraud and cheating. President of the United States, Barack Obama, was silent the first day of the anti-regime protest. Now, one day later, when Iran citizens held the largest anti-regime protest, and again, we're talking about 2009, the largest anti-regime protest since the country's 79 revolution, Obama finally gave a muted response saying that it was up to the Iranians to make decision about who Iran's leaders will be, and that we respect Iranian sovereignty and want to avoid the United States being the issue inside of Iran. This is a very poor Barack Obama, sounding more like Walter Cronkite. But then the president followed up that statement by saying he's deeply troubled by the violence he'd seen on television, but he never really condemned. That was the extent. That was the strength of the condemnation and the statements made by the leader of the United States and thus the leader of the free world. He waited 8 days to make another comment. This thing went on for a while. And like I said, we're in the fourth or fifth day now of what we're seeing going on in these, in this, I don't want to call it a, you know, Green Revolution 2.0, but for want of a better name, that's what's happening here. And the more the people are standing up, the more people stand up with them. Now, Barack Obama had the exact same opportunity that Donald Trump has now. We see what Barack Obama did. And the reason that Barack Obama said no more than he did was because he already had representatives from the State Department dealing with representatives from the Iranian government in a dialogue that would eventually lead to this terrible international nuclear deal that we have with these guys and the money we've dumped on them. You know what? All this talking makes a man thirsty. We're close to the bottom of the hour. So I'm going to take a break. We're going to do a brief musical interlude. And in case you were wondering, Scott's got something going on. Couldn't be with us tonight. He sends his regrets, and he'll be with us. He reassures me on Thursday. And what I'm doing right now is I'm just blowing a lot of smoke because I'm trying to come up with here we go. A little bit of the Andrews Sisters. The American Brand Radio Initiative will return right after this brief musical interlude.
From out Chicago way, he had a boogie style that no one else could play. He was the top man at his class, but then his number came up and he was gone with the draft. He's in the army now, a blowing reveille. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. They made him blow a bugle for his Uncle Sam. It really brought him down because he couldn't jam. The captain seemed to understand, because the next day the cap went out and drafted a band, and now the company jumps ready for his reveille. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. A toot, 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 a toot,
playing rhythm. He makes the company jump when he plays Beverly. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. He was the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. And when he played boogie woogie bugle, he was busy as a bee. And when he plays, he makes the company jump and he's the boy. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. He goes the day to the bar. He can't to blow a note if the bass and guitar isn't with him. The company jumps when he plays Reveille. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy of Company B. He puts the boys to sleep with boogie every night and wakes them up the same way in the early bright. They clap their hands and stamp their feet because they know how he plays when someone gives him a beat. He really breaks it up when he plays Reveille. He's the boogie woogie bugle boy.
The negative, latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between. You got to spread joy up to the maximum. Bring gloom down to the minimum. Have faith or pandemonium, liable to walk upon the scene.
To illustrate his last remark, Jonah in the whale, Noah in the ark. What did they do just when everything looked so dark?
Man, they said we better accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between. No, do not mess with Mr. In Between. Do you hear me?
Chillin' Anna, you will hear about the eliminating of the negative and an accent on a positive.
Gather round the children if you're willing and sit tight while I start reviewing the attitude of doing right.
You gotta accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative, don't mess with Mr. In Between.
Got to spread joy
up to the maximum.
Bring gloom
down
to the minimum.
Otherwise,
pandemonium, liable to walk upon the scene.
To illustrate,
well, illustrate
my last remark.
You got the law.
Jonah
in the whale, Noah in the ark.
What did they say?
What did they say?
Say when everything looks so dark. Man, they said we better
accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between.
No, don't mess with Mr. In Between.
Well, now, okay, Bing Crosby and the Andrews Sisters there. I love old Bing. Welcome back. This is the American Brand Radio Initiative. My name's Bostic, James Bostic. It's good to be here with you. When the president, I'm not even going to call him that. I never really looked at that SOB as much of a president anyway, but we had to say it at the time, and I try to work clean and be respectful, but geez, oh Pete, for the love of God. When Obama crawled into bed with Iran, so did the news media. Defending the legacy of the Iran deal has become one of the media's main projects, and so the media, in relationship to these protests that I've been talking about in the first half of the show. So the media was caught completely unprepared by these massive protests in Iran. So instead of covering the protests, the news media, the CNNs, the ABCs, the CBSs, the NBCs, the headline newsers, the Huffington Post, all those, the usual suspects, and yes, Fox News too. All these guys did basically initially when they had to start talking about it, they didn't have any other choice. They just rewrote the spin and threw it out there that they got from the Iranian regime. Now, here's the thing. There are three myths to look out for. The first myth is that these protests that we're seeing against the theocratic regime are about internal corruption. And yes, they are. The protests are about internal corruption in Iran the same way they were about internal corruption in the Soviet Union. They're anti-government protests. Okay? That's what we're talking about. They're protesting against the government. But this is a government where political power in that particular state is inherently Islamist. And therefore, so is the type of corruption. The Islamic Republic of Iran fundamentally has consolidated political and economic power into a variety of, quote, quasi-military religious institutions that maintain that power that they have in Iran throughout, well, through political terror. That's what we're seeing from the Iranian regime. That's what we've seen from them since 1979. It is a despotic and tyrannical regime, and they're really, really mean people, and they got to go. One of the symbols that I have seen, you know, in doing show prep, and I do a lot of show, you know, I'm on here all the time looking at this crap, and it makes me crazy sometimes. But, you know, if you're going to be good at this, it's what you got to do. One symbol, one photograph, and I've seen a lot of photographs, and they're always the same, you know, Middle Eastern photographs you see, a bunch of swarthy hook-nosed dudes with bad haircuts running around with Molotov cocktails wearing Adidas sport jackets and, you know, Nike running suits, but, you know, they got bricks in their hands, they've got firebombs, they've got sticks in their hands. The difference is these people are rising up against this corrupt despotic regime. And the picture that has stood out more than any other picture that I've seen so far, and I've seen it more than I have any of the other pictures. So people have focused on this one to be emblematic and symbolic of what's going on. It's an Iranian woman. She's probably, the picture's kind of fuzzy, excuse me, but she's probably somewhere in her 30s. And she's got long black hair. And she's standing up on a barricade or the hood of a vehicle or something. And what it would appear to be is it would appear that this woman had on a stick a white flag. But it isn't. It isn't that at all. It's her hijab. And that's the covering that women are forced to wear in fundamentalist Islamic theocratic nations like we have in Iran. Well, she's not wearing that hijab. She's revolting against this entire theocratic, this entire fundamentalist culture. That's what the Iranian people are doing. Yeah, they're protesting against the government. They're protesting against corruption. They're protests against these people. These people have to go. That's what the Iranian people are saying. And there's a lot more to it than that. These people have been oppressed. They've been imprisoned. They've been tortured. They've been burned. They've been raped. Their families have been destroyed. Their homes, their property has been taken away from them. And they've had enough. So when the media says it's just about corruption and that there is no ideological component or cultural component to these protests, that's a lie, and it's been repeatedly proven false. All you got to do is look through some reliable places on the internet, Breitbart, American Thinker, Front Page Magazine. That's where a lot of my information comes from. Who's that crazy guy? Jones, Alex Jones. He's sensationalistic, but he's got some reliable stuff too. A lot of places you can go out there. So the media would have you believe that this is not ideologically or culturally based. That's a lie. It is. These people want out from underneath the boot of these tyrants in Tehran. You know, the whole time during that break, I never took a drink. I have this guy. I'm going to take a little break off of this because I can feel that vein on the side of my head starting to throb. So I'm going to back off of this for a moment. I have this guy at school. He's one of my buddies. We work together. He sits at my table. And he's a Downs guy. And I have a lot of experience with Downs people. And he went to Vegas with his parents. He's about 16 years old. And he went out to Vegas with his parents. And he and his parents are really, really good people. He brought me back an insulated mug. You know, it's all sparkly blue on the outside, one of these insulated tumblers. And it's got the sign, you know, "Welcome to Fabulous Las Vegas" on it. And really rat packy and cool. And I keep it at school. And that's what I drink out of. And so he sees it every day. When we're sitting together at our table doing work. And I would say probably about 8 times a day at some point, I'm going to, because I'm just as bad at it as he is, I'm going to raise my glass, and he's going to raise his glass, and we're going to drink, and then at the same time, we both go, that's our thing, man. Okay, now I just wanted to share that with you. Back to this stuff on Iran. The second myth. Hello.
It would be a tremendous ally to have. A tremendous ally.